Welcome to the Mindful Medicina Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jeanette Daniels. I'm a naturopathic medical doctor on a mission to inspire a renewed confidence in the intelligence of the human body. And joining the conversation today is my friend and colleague, Janelle Hartman, lymphatic and colon hydrotherapist, esteemed yoga teacher of teachers, and the co-producer of this show. As we head into our healing journeys, we most often are instructed to dissect our dietary inputs, our sleep hygiene, our light environment, and possibly drug side effects. Our default as a species is to look out into our environment for toxic offenders, but what if we have overlooked the deleterious effects of toxic relationships? Like a rush of dopamine, a new relationship can bring us to life until. As a naturopathic doctor, I have witnessed patients bathing in the worst physical symptoms as they drowned into a relationship riddled with discourse, misunderstanding, disconnect, and fear. Can we really be well in the midst of a toxic partnership? Well, there is no better person to have on our show to help us take these first steps to understanding the dynamics between men and women in partnership than Alison Armstrong. Alison Armstrong's exploration of human behavior began in 1991 with her decision to study men. To find out how she was bringing out the worst in them, and hopefully how to bring out the best. Her success in understanding men naturally led to studying women's behavior and making vital connections between the two. As for her work, it has evolved over the decades. She now illuminates human characteristics that precede and express themselves regardless of gender, age, and upbringing. She distinguishes normal human instincts that compel both men and women to behave in ways that contradict and undermine our own purposes, goals, values, needs, and relationships. Besides fulfilling the need to understand why people behave as they do, Alison offers practical partnership-based alternatives. Through her seminars, books, online programs, and media contributions, she has been giving millions of people access to more fulfilling lives, loving relationships, stronger families, and productive organizations. Alison is a sought-after speaker and thought leader amongst people who desire to live empowered lives. Her philosophy and approach are referenced and taught by other authors, speakers, business consultants, and therapists. Her live events and over 100 hours of online programs are available at alisonarmstrong.com, and that's Alison with one L. We hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as we did. Welcome, everybody. Guess who is here with us today? We're super stoked. Woo-hoo! We got Alison Armstrong here, and she is going to school us on all ways of understanding in 1 hour, insert sarcasm, after like 30 years of studying the differences between men and women and the opposite instincts that come with each. And we're going to do our best to get her to come back for 2 or 3 episodes because we know we're going to barely touch the surface here. But I wanted to invite her on today because I find in practice with my patients that sometimes at the root of our sickness or, I'll call it dis-ease, right? Two separate words. We're not at ease and the nervous system responds accordingly. That in these cases, it can often be discord in relationships. And so I really, really am so stoked to have her here today because though I can tell all my patients, well, I mean, really, your prescription is leave your husband. That's not fair. And so, or leave your wife. But in these times, it's really important that we address more than just the physical plane of dysfunction or dysfunction, disordered eating and exercise and et cetera, et cetera. We want to go into the relationships of things.
Can I just add that I also believe that part of healing is having hope for repair and understanding harmony and how these differences can actually be very complementary. And there's just the skill and subtlety and the knowledge, just like with our health, knowledge is power, like mm-hmm. understanding how an organism works or how a dynamic works, how a system works, is just a very healing thing. And just to feel hope. Hope is really, I think, where a lot of that foundational healing starts. So mm-hmm. we're so excited you're
yes,
here.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Allison, for joining us.
You're welcome. You said so many things already I want to dive into. So I'm counting on you to write this.
Counting on me. Okay, let's do it. So what I would say is probably, since some people have not heard of you, I'll start this. I'm going to start it off like this, Allison. How I discovered okay. you, this is a crazy, crazy situation here. I've been, this is full transparency, I've been with women my whole life. I've only dated women. I've been engaged to a woman. And as of this year, I've fallen for a man. And my brain mm-hmm. is like, what the F is going on?
Yeah.
And how do I relate to a man in a romantic relationship where I'm so used to the communication between myself and a woman? And so I ended up yes. going to like some sort of gathering where they were meeting to watch one of your videos. I was like, who's Allison, right? And I'm like, I'll go to that yes. since I'm new to this heterosexual situation. So I go and I'm like, poof, like, you know, the emoji where the head blows up. And I'm like, okay, I need yes. to feast on her information. You've been like a guru to me in the this transition. And so it's just been remarkable for me. It's I don't know if I would be where I'm at, like understanding him, if I didn't find your stuff arbitrarily through a friend. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
Though? Because I think you may actually have an advantage as long as you don't turn into a ninny. Oh. So what I mean by that is, let's just say there was a time in my life where I was boycotting men. And what was brilliant in retrospect about that period of time is that I had, all I was looking for from men was friendship. Hmm. And I learned how men could be friends and that I could be real friends with men because all the rest of that junk was off the table. And one of the questions that I give my students when they're saying, what should I do? What should I do? I say, well, ask yourself, what would I do if he were my friend? Mm-hmm. And if you answer the question that way, you are the most likely to get near the space of partnership that I have explored and stand for. It's the P in PACT of our company is partnership, and it's my passion. And if you start with friend, what would I do if he were my friend? Because real friendships, which many people have never had a real friend, real friendships are not transactional. Real friends are I'm for you for you. And thank you for being for me. This isn't about what we can get from each other. And if you're that way in romantic relationships, everything will start at a higher, better, more satisfying, more nervous system calming level
Yeah.
if you do that. So you
Yeah.
actually have something on your side.
Hmm.
Big
Yeah.
something on your side.
Yeah.
As
And
long as you don't have too much chemistry, that what you fell for, what you fell in love with was the human being,
yeah.
you'll be fine.
Yeah. And it's been 7 years of super duper duper organically slow getting to know him, becoming friends. And then it was like, poof, it hit me out of nowhere and smacked me like a truck from behind. And honestly, if it had happened any other way, I'd say, I'm sorry, I'm gay. Done. But it had to sneak up on me. I had to like him. Okay, I think that is way more important than loving someone because I love a lot of
Way.
people.
Love is easy. Love is, well, depending on how you relate to it, but we don't have to go there. But like means to prefer. So, and preferences are tricky things because having our preferences met gives us a sense of safety, and we can overinvest in preferences. We can, I recognized a few years ago that my life was organized around fulfilling my preferences, and that I had this spiritual experience where I was shown that preferences are just an expression of ego, and having our preferences gives us a sense that we have control, and it's an illusion. And one of the 12 things that makes a woman the right person to commit to is that he experiences that she likes him, that how he is, she prefers the person with her to be. And so that sets him at ease. If he feels like he can win, he's good enough. I'm good enough. And everything's different because of that. So, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So so you're my guru, and I'm hoping that we can guru you out to our listeners.
Guru you
So
out.
I'm gonna this is a new expression. I'm guruing you out. Okay, so what I would like to do is go back to 1991, back in time, where you really started to dig deep into this topic, and I wanted you to, if you would, tell our listeners how the heck did you get into this and why, and if you could go into the whole frog farmer situation, because I think that's a nice place to start.
Well, it's the place I started. I had been married. I was separated from my husband. We were getting a divorce. We had our son was a year and a half old, I think, at the time. And I guess 2 and a half at the time. And we'd been separated. Yeah, it was 1 and a half when I said, I'm out of here. I didn't really say that like that. I just realized I would rather be alone for the rest of my life than be in a so-called marriage that would had no chance of being a partnership, no chance of being a union, none whatsoever. And I think it's an important decision for both men and women to make. Like, at what does the person who gets to be that important to you, what do they have to be, and how do they have to behave, and how do they have to relate to you for you to be better off with them instead of better off without them? And it's actually a luxury that we have as women in this day and age, and our ability to support ourselves, that we can make a decision like that. Because for millennia, it was about surviving, that we needed one of them to survive. And we still have those instincts. And as you know, they get activated, right? When there's tension between us and the people that we're depending upon, what that fear, that adrenaline, with the cortisol, what all that will do to our systems. I mean, we can be wackadoodle for the longest time, even if it just happens like once in a month, where it's going to take a while for it to resort itself out. And I have a dear friend who practices all kinds of awesome medicine. And she was the one who taught me about the Gillian Steele, mm-hmm. I'm sure you're familiar with mm-hmm. it, and people don't know about it, that how much our thoughts affect our hormones and then our hormones affect our thoughts. And if you think something's an adventure or a cool challenge or, yeah, let's get at this, I can do this, then whatever adrenaline we've managed to build up, for example, by rest, or we're on hormone therapy, or we're eating right, you know, because mm-hmm. there's activation by things that we eat. However we built that up, the testosterone, however we built it up, which is the hormone of focus, short-term memory, ambition, sex drive, it's a huge part of our sense of well-being, along with oxytocin, right? There's this whole cocktail going on in here. And if we think we can't do something, then the pygidium gland converts it into cortisol, takes all that energy, all that drive, and converts it into cortisol. Or if you make a man who's built all his testosterone up, and I think we have testosterometers, and we can like smell like, okay, he's useless. All right, he's not quite handy. Oh, he's handy now. Let's give him something to do. And then we plop down and say, can you just listen? And then thinking his fidgeting is because he doesn't care about us, or thinks we're boring, or he just doesn't like it, or he's not interested. And all those things are really scary. Not knowing that him building that testosterone by resting, now he's got to spend it, or aromatase is going to turn it into estrogen, and he's sitting there being biologically emasculated because you told him to just listen instead of said, okay, I can sense you have some energy now, and I can't wait any longer. Could you please help me? I am so full of all the shoulds and coulds and whats and if onlys that I can't see straight. I can't care about anybody else. Could you just hold the trash while I just barf it out? You don't have to do anything about it. You don't have to understand it. You don't have to solve anything. Just keep nodding and saying, anything else? But say anything else like you're hoping there's more, okay? You can't be, are you done yet? So, yeah, these are the things that I've been paying attention to since 1991. How can we help each other be our best instead of with literally opposing instincts? We survive in opposing ways. Mm-hmm. Yep. primal, like it's... Most women survive through connection. They're seeking safety through connection. Most men and a lot of women seek security through productivity and the rewards of productivity. And yet, when we're seeking connection, we will interrupt their productivity to get the connection we're desperately looking for. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, what? And then we think they're assholes, right? But not only did we just disrupt their productivity, we also disrupted their peace. Focus is peace. Just like for diffuse awareness soaked, fully operating ovaries, full of over like that, all that estrogen, we can't not be scanning for danger, right? And what gives us a sense of peace is having more than enough time to do anything we think we should do. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be at peace. But they say, hey, we're living in 5 minutes. and we're like, excuse me, honey, I want to ask you a question. He's like, yes. Well, you know, the other day I was, and we're not asking the question. And we're not asking the question. And we're not asking the question. And the question is, and we don't realize how much we're antagonizing each other mm-hmm. and don't mean to. And so... in answer to your actual question, February 1991, a friend of mine stood up in a landmark evening session of the Advanced Course Seminar, which had just come to Newport Beach, California. It was newly minted. And she said, why is it that men are wonderful in the beginning? And they take you to romantic places. They give you romantic presents. They listen to you talk about your pets and your family as if they care. And then after a few weeks or a few months, they turn into sports watching, pizza eating, beer belching, couch slugs. Why is that? And he called her a frog farmer.
Wow.
And finally she asked, okay, what's a frog farmer? And he said, some women turn frogs into princes. You, my dear, turn princes into frogs.
Boom.
Yeah.
Whew.
And my life flashed before me, including my latest strategy, which my latest strategy was basically to poke the bear, that I was convinced that the wonderful man was a total act. And if I pressed hard enough, I would see the real man before I fell for the fake. And so I, best defense was a good offense. I used everything to put them off balance, to steal their power, their machismo, their I'm God's gift to women. I did everything I could to undercut them, having no idea that I was antagonizing their survival instincts, and therefore what I was getting was the caveman, not the real man, the caveman in total protect himself through fight, flight, or freeze. And it might be, you know, I likened it to kicking a dog and being surprised that it runs away, or kicking a dog and being surprised that it bites you, or you kick a dog and it bites you and then it runs away, which is what happens all the time. Now, on the other hand, men don't understand what they're doing to bring out the worst in women. This, we teach in our Dating with Distinctions, get out of the text zone of online dating immediately.
Yeah.
Right? Dr. Luann Brizendine's studies on the amount of oxytocin released by a text message, that men are turning women into stalkers. And they could have dozens that they're texting the same message to and having no idea what they're doing to that other system. And then they think women are crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They think women are crazy. You did that. Just like I brought out the asshole, you bring out the crazy, guys. So that's where it started. And honestly, 36, I always forget what year. We're in 26, right?
Yeah.
36, I'm already planning 27. So 36 years later, 35 or whatever, I never committed to this. I thought it would take 2 or 3 months to learn everything there was worth knowing about these shallow, selfish, feeling absent, maybe soulless creatures. But at least maybe I could bring out the best in those creatures. And then I slowed down and I learned how to listen to them. And I had men that for whom I was a coach, you would call it these days. And I didn't need them. I didn't need from them what I would need in a romantic relationship. So I could be their friend. I could care. And they started revealing themselves to me, and I've been hooked ever since.
Yeah,
I have not gotten to the bottom of their well, nor have I gotten to the, I have not mapped all the stars in their universe, which I thought last summer that I had gotten all the major constellations, and then I was thrown a complete what dropped into my head. And
wow,
it's been the joy of my life, and especially how they've taught me. I mean, I was such a feminist, right? And we're better people. We should be in charge of everything, and anything you can do, I can do better, except pick up that commercial role of carpeting.
Yeah,
which I accepted. I laid carpet, and I bought it that we should have a man and keep one and make him act right, but make sure he knows that you don't need him at all times. And I bought into all of that. And then to find out that when we need something, they have a purpose. And they need to have a purpose in order to proceed with living in all its hardships when what's sitting right next to them is death, and that they could die any day, any minute, and they just are hoping they don't die for no good reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That brings me to that saying that a man will die on his own sword, right? That there's honor and integrity, and they want to be valued. And so, yeah, I think it would be really great, speaking of like going back in time where we have more of a 3D plane. We talk about 3D versus 5D plane, but like going into the hunter-gatherer distinction, right? When we talk about man and woman and how that makes them present differently in their relationships, where the man is the hunter and the woman is the gatherer, and how that looks different as far as communication and needs and what makes us feel safe, right? Based on those quote-unquote job titles, if you will. Could you go into the hunter-gatherer perspective? And I know that you've added to it as we move forward in time, 2026. We have yes. women now playing hunter as well. And so maybe just starting with the OG thought of this is men hunters, this is women gatherers, and then take it from there, like what you've added to that over the years, because you have.
So, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, I, if we look through the lens of hunting and gathering and what the necessity of both for the survival of our species, and the studies that have been done that show, for example, that in general, men and women don't have the same vision. They have track vision. The faster something's moving, the bigger the difference between their ability to follow it and ours. We have scan vision. We can't not scan for danger, but we're also scanning for life. Life force energy, is it thriving? We notice when somebody's energy is down, for example. We hate hurt feelings because we can see life getting squished out of that woman specifically, because our feelings tend to be all in one place, mostly in one place. But it has evolved. And we did a video about women as gatherers back in about 2006 or 7 or 8 or something. And Tony Robbins has been teaching the material ever since, but it's incomplete because more women are in what I would call hunting mode more of the time than they're in gathering mode, because of the way that we naturally adapt to what's valued. And in most, I don't know if it's all, but I encounter people from all of these. In most first world countries, productivity is what's valued. Do you know it's the GNP and and the GFP, the gross family product, right? So we have become productivity organized, right? Which is a committed mindset. What are your goals? What are your intentions? What's your destination? And that committed mindset is fueled by testosterone, which men have between 15 and 30 times more testosterone than women naturally. So now we're having 30 or 40-year-old women with heart attacks. And it's so while we can do it, our bodies aren't made to do it at the pace that they can keep up. And
sorry, I don't understand.
That was really funny. That's timing. Awesome. That was hilarious.
That's pretty funny.
We should keep that in.
That was, yeah, we will for sure.
You're not expected to understand.
Yeah.
I'm in airplane mode. Why is she listening to me in airplane mode? Oh, she's a spy.
See, we believe you.
Yeah. Well, so the thing is, so we have 15 hours on this topic of if a woman is in an open gathering state of mind, then what helps her feel safe? What helps her what supports her in that mode where she has so much input that she can't tune out. The opposite is single focus, that decides what to tune out without checking in with the person's mind who's getting tuned out. Mm-hmm. It just tunes out anything considered irrelevant. And this is why we're complementary, right? He may be pursuing, you know, a wild boar, you know, some of the bloodiest meat in the animal kingdom. That's why lions love warthogs. But they're dangerous, and there's dangers coming from elsewhere as well. Well, have one of us at your back. We can't not scan. We won't miss anything. Mm-hmm. Why is that bush out of place? What was here? What moved the bush? You know, it's like, why is the sock there? Who moved the chair? All of this is brought into modern day. And what most men and women don't know is that what they love about women, the ways of being that we can access because of this connection to the eternal, whatever we call it, that all those ways of being are what has life force flow to them. Yeah. We are their battery rechargers. And they don't realize that by giving us a time limit, giving us pressure to produce something, like in the Queen's Code, you know, Melissa's got to go into action because her husband's bringing home colleagues and she's got to produce this dinner out of nowhere and be gracious and spacious and wonderful. Neither one of them knows. It all goes awry because of what's happening to her. And so as we become aware of this, we can protect ourselves better, mm-hmm. right? Like I have an alarm go off at the time to start moving towards doing the same next thing. Mm-hmm. Not at the time I have to do the next thing.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's like this, okay, now we're going to shift to doing this and slowly mm-hmm. wrap up and serenely move to the next space. But it comes from having plenty of time. And if there's one thing that women don't build in for themselves is plenty of time. And it's funny, just a couple of minutes can completely change all the reactions in our bodies, our sense of, I can do this versus, oh God, I can't handle this. Mm-hmm. And what those mindsets then do to all the things in our body, like I already talked about. Mm-hmm. So yes, I began in 1991. I thought it would be very short term. And then I never committed to do it this long. I just became fascinated, and I'm still fascinated by them in
amazing
deep, deep wells. They're the exact opposite. I'm convinced that their emotions, I'm convinced that they are afraid of our emotions because we're afraid we're showing them the tip of the iceberg. They don't know that what's coming out is all of it.
That's so funny. I love that.
Yes, yes. But they think it's the tip of the iceberg because of how much emotion they have a grip on. Because when I first went on bioidentical hormone therapy, it said it would take a few weeks for my body, the receptor sites, to become sensitive to the testosterone. No. Right? And I was like overdosed on testosterone and I got angry and my entire body, I was looking out at the valley from my house. There's this, I can see forever. And I'm looking at the valley and I was convinced my body was going to blow up like an atomic bomb and take out the whole valley. And I like, oh my gosh, no wonder men are so proud of having a grip on anger, right? And their emotions are big and their feelings, oh my gosh, their depth of feeling. Just listen to the songs, read the poetry. They feel so deeply. Yeah. But we think they don't because we don't understand that they are warriors. They are warriors. They will die to save us and our children and any man they think we're better off with than them, that we'll be better off with that man than their ability to protect us. They will sacrifice themselves that he lives. And part of that being a warrior is to conceal anything that could be used against them. And there's, if they're afraid it's going to be used against them, or more often they have evidence that we will use it. You share your feelings with me, I'm going to manipulate you with them. But you said you love me, right? And you share your secrets with me, those things that I'm going to share them with other people because it will increase my status that you told me such special things. So I'm going to pass it on because I'm a herd animal. I've got to work on increasing my status. That's how I survive. So we do things not even intentionally that hurt the other person and have them know, I am not safe here. I am not safe. I cannot relax. I can't just be. I'm not accepted. I'm not protected. I won't be cherished if I'm not. For women, it's if I'm not perfect, that I need to be perfect. And men, they really think they need to be godlike. They need to be Superman with nothing to defeat them. And they're deeply ashamed of their failures, which is why they won't talk about them. And there's so much beauty that can come out between us. I really think we're made for each other, but we don't know it.
It's interesting
At the level of instincts, we are not made for
I
each
was
other.
just going to say that. I was just
Right.
going to say that despite the opposite instincts, it's actually
Yes.
a compliment. We complement each other if we can understand the differences, I believe, in. I really almost think it comes down to what kind of focus that each has, right? And so you talk about, the singular focus with men and then the diffuse focus with women, and like, what are we scanning our environments for? What is our purpose? And thereby,
Yes.
we're doing those things so we can be safe, not just in our environment, but in our relationships. So, what makes a man feel safe with a woman?
Well, it's interesting. They almost never talk about safe unless they're talking about like everybody's safe, the family's safe. They rarely talk about themselves being safe unless it has to do with communicating. And then I've learned so much because, as they say, I'm so safe to talk to. And I practice being that way. And men who've been part of my studies for 30 years know I will not reveal them. I will ask, can I quote you? Can I quote you anonymously? Can I quote you with you attached? And I will do whatever they say, no matter how badly I want to say that this famous person said this famous said this thing about what I said, right? And it, so you have to prove that you won't betray them, that you won't take what they say and try to use it to convince them of something, and that you won't pass it on, and that you won't come back at them in a heated moment and to say, well, when you told me that thing, I thought, oh, you're just like your father, right? Like, we can't use anything against them.
Yeah, it's like a
And
weaponizing.
it's easy. We do. And but if we check into ourselves, it's a way that we're like, we hate when they use anything against us. Oh, are you on the reg? You must be on the reg. Seriously, you have no idea what you're talking about. Do not criticize me with that, right? And so this, what we inherited, and I think we inherited from our planet, we live in an adversarial paradigm. And so the against each other and on guard with each other is natural from a survival point of view. And the quality of relating that we're looking for, I say the quality of relating because I found out this mysterious thing about relationships, why we mostly all suck at them. I found out they don't exist. There's actually no such thing that we can build, or no such vault that's holding all the loving and the hurtful moments in a place for us to access when needed. No, there's it's just instances of being related, which actually I found in the dictionary, in the men's dictionary. When I looked up relationship, it said instances of being related. It didn't say this thing that builds up between two people that you can count on and blah, 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 blah. And you have to keep overcoming the horrible moments, but you can count on the loving moments when you're horrible. No. No. It doesn't work that way. How are you being in this moment? How are you listening in this moment? What are you listening for? Are you listening for ammo? Right? Are you listening to diagnose them? What is he? Oh, yes, definitely a narcissist. Oh, definitely emotionally idiotic. Oh, definitely typical accountant. Okay, I'm done. I'm out of here. I mean, we can listen. Like, what are they? What are they? Instead of who are they? Right? And what matters to him? What's important to him? What do they care about? Him, her, whatever. We're not paying attention. We're mostly on guard and preparing to be on attack at some later point. And we don't even recognize it. It's so normal. It's a sitcom. I know a man who said, well, no, Allison's work is sufficiently in the world when everybody loves Raymond isn't funny anymore. And we actually know that. Okay. So yeah, it can be so beautiful if we just sort out how it actually works, and instead of just thinking the other person is dysfunctional, there's something wrong with the other person. We practice, what if there's a good reason for that? What if no one's misbehaving, including you? And what if we start, it's called Lux, which is why I encourage everybody to start in our curriculum. We teach something called a process of honoring. And you might think that a process of honoring would like lead up to respect, which is what men have a survival need for respect. And we propose that it's a process of honoring starts with respect, is specifically with the definition granting innate value. And what if you granted innate value to yourself? I mean, I did an interview. I found this magazine the other day because I'm selling my house, so I'm sorting out. I'll spare you. But I found the magazine. It was the only written interview I've ever been given. They asked me to finish these questions, and one of the questions was, "What are your greatest weaknesses?" And I was trying to figure it out, and so I went to my husband and I said, "Okay, I'm working on this, and I want to read this to you, and tell me what you think." And every weakness, he said, "But that's how you can do this, and but that's how you can do that, and that's the source of this." And he disagreed with all of my perceived weaknesses, and I said, "So what do you think is my greatest weakness?" And he was real quiet, and then he said, "Sometimes you hang things on doorknobs."
Ew. What a
And I
keeper.
asked him, I was like, "What?" And he described it, and I knew he was right. I hang things on doorknobs that need to go someplace else, right? They need to go in, they need to go out. And then I said, "Why didn't you ever tell me that?" He said, "I did." "Like when?" "I don't know, a few years ago, near the beginning." And I'm like, "Why didn't you ever tell me that again?" I thought you knew. Like
Oh, man.
oh, if only we could grant ourselves. I mean, if a man is critical of you, just throw him back. Do you
Oh,
know, just
God.
the end. The end. It's so damaging to women. The we have no protection. The end, if he's critical of you. Because in general, they're so much more accepting of us, and all of our life-giving properties are worth it. So yeah, she's like that. And that's how men commit. They scoop us up with everything about us. That's how, and they'll even defend us to other people. It's just how she is. Not us. Not us. We got a whole change rehabilitation program planned for you. Hence, back to what I congratulated you on in the beginning. You like him. You don't have a whole change agenda for him. You know him well, you've seen him well, and you like him. How cool is that?
Can I tell you the one thing that is just this is a personal thing. I think the thing that is
Oh.
most challenging, I'm speaking for myself, between communication with men and women is women are transparent, and I feel that men are not, meaning, or in my experience so far, that they leave out a lot of detail that I want so I can plan my day accordingly, because time management is important to me. And also, knowing allows me to emotionally prepare for how to support you through the day. So it seems like some details I think are important to me that aren't being shared. Usually it's social. I know about the to-dos and the chores that have to be done by said person, but I don't, but then there's a social event or a dinner and I don't know about it. So it's like for women, they're telling me everything. The berries you mention, right? Like the harvesting, like you're giving me all the details. Hey, that bush moved. I need to know that. But they don't. They don't get hyperbolic about all of the details because they are right now in the moment. This is what's happening. I'm hungry. I need to eat. Da 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 da. So give me some feedback if you have any on communication with regard to how much detail or transparency do each of the genders give or share? Is there a difference?
Well, that women give details does not mean they're transparent.
That's a good point.
That's true.
We are fantastic pretenders. We pretend to like people. We pretend to be comfortable. We pretend to be patient. We pretend to be compassionate. We pretend to care. We pretense is so normal for women. So, and we're not actually transparent. We give details to people that we trust. We won't use the details against us. They won't go steal our berries. But we already got what we wanted from the sale. And we already got what we want from the sale. Now I'll tell you about the sale because I already got what I wanted, but I didn't want it yesterday. Yeah, so it's a myth. That we are much more open and transparent. We're compelled to give details. It's instinctual to give details to the people that we trust. In case, I get sick, you can go get the berries and feed my children. It's all survival. To men, they're very aware of the amount of time and energy and resources they have. They're acutely aware. We tend to think we have way more time and way more energy than we actually have. And they're acutely aware of the scarcity of it and the expenditure of it. And this is why they get so pissed if somebody wastes anything of theirs. If you wasted my time by bringing something irrelevant to what I care about. And I was talking to a man who's doing a bunch of work on my house for me. And I said, I just want to check before I go upstairs. You would prefer that I just leave you alone to install the faucet? Solve that problem and I leave you alone and I'll be upstairs and you'll holler if you need anything. You don't need anything else from me? And he's like, yeah, that'd be preferable. Because he's used to somebody yakking away, talking, keeping him company. Because as women, if I'm doing all the work, you can at least support me by keeping me company. They don't want to be kept company unless they want to be kept company. They're watching a football game. Sit down next to me and keep me company. No, I'm not going to pay any attention to you, but I'm aware that you're there and I'm glad that you're there. And even though it's mystifying to you, I still want you there. We don't understand this. So they're going to be careful about do you really need to know? And you're going to just not know because of the way that you plan that's different than him, that you actually need evening commitments on a calendar. Could we fill in the calendar together so I know where you're going to be when, and then I can plan my life to do what I know needs to get accomplished or that I want to accomplish. Oh, okay, sure. All right, Thursday I've got this, Friday I've got that. But he knows where he's got to be. And if he's not used to being coupled and interdependent, it doesn't occur to him to tell you that. And they never want to waste energy stating the obvious. And there's like I keep telling men to spare a detail. Like when we say, you know, do you want to do this or this? And you say, I don't care, which now you've just stumped the pleaser because you don't care. Now, how the hell do I make a decision? Just finish the sentence. Say what you really mean. And I found out what they really mean is, I don't care. So please yourself. That's the end of the sentence then. Make what you want for dinner. You decide where we're going. You just please yourself. They and it's not that they don't care because they're too stupid to know they should care, or they're too lazy to care. Caring is their biggest expenditure of energy, including caring about you. There's nothing more risky than caring about you. So they guard caring. They actually choose not to care. They're unwilling to care. I learned this from them, and it's awesome. No, I'm not willing to care about that. This goes back to preferences. So it the communication is inherently difficult, mostly because the purpose of our speaking isn't the same. We don't speak for the same reason. So yes, there's an exchange of information as tribal members and got to get back to get the berries before the bears do. But there's also, for men, they speak to make a point. And they wish that other people did too. Is she going to get to the point? Is there a point? Oh, God. No, there's not a point, but there's going to be a test. I have to remember all this. Eyes roll back in their head. They're gone. And which is why, if we want them to just listen to us and not keep interrupting to figure out what the point is, or not keep on interrupting because we're obvious upset, so they're going to diagnose the problem so they can solve the problem and save the maiden, which they're so compelled to do, but they haven't identified the problem yet. And so they interrupt us to ask these questions so that they can diagnose the problem, which is a result to them. Just to figure out what a problem is, that's a result. And they have to produce results. So we're in a puddle and we're furious, and you don't really listen to me, you don't care about me. And he's like, what the hell happened? I was trying to take care of her. I was just trying to figure out the problem so I could solve it and I could save her, and then she'd be happy again. Well, what did I do wrong? Everything.
Well, I also think that in communication, these are some things that you've touched upon where you might feel like a man is maybe not telling you all the details or sharing so willingly. And I think it's because at some level they're withholding because they're afraid that detail will hurt your feelings, and or you'll basically you know, attack them for telling you the truth of things. And then you shut them down and they don't want to share with you anymore. Like, you blew it, you know? So there's that need to protect you from information they think might hurt you, or you've attacked them in the past and now they're just afraid to talk to you.
All of that happens, and it's why we have to build a track record. Like, so I did a program once called Why You Can't Trust Men to Tell the Truth. And we advertised it publicly. It might have been like $15 or something. And I put it out there to attract all the women who are sure you can't trust men to tell the truth, and they want to know, like, what to do about it. And some of my students were outraged. What happened to Allison? She thinks you can't trust men to tell the truth. And so we sent out an email to our men saying, and the title was Allison Still Has Your Back. And it's Why You Can't Trust Men to Tell the Truth. The subtitle could be How Women Teach Honest Men It's Not Worth It.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it has to do with that. And this is something that we got all cattywampus because it works between women, and we use it against men, and it blows up horrifically, and we don't understand all the repercussions. And that is that as the weaker and smaller gender, we're convinced, we're just sure, we don't even examine it, that we survive by being pleasing. And don't upset anybody ever. Like, it's the worst thing to do is to upset people. They might abandon you. They might ostracize you. They might leave you for the tiger and move away, and we depend on each other. And so when a man tells us a truth that we don't like, we actually think that if he knows how much that truth upsets me, he will change his truth. We really think he will. Like, if he knows how upset I am that he doesn't want to have children, he'll change his mind. No. So we blow up when we hear the truth, thinking he'll change the truth. They're smart. They know they had no problem with that truth with anybody else but themselves until they told you. That the problem happened when they told you. Mm-hmm. And so they just stop telling the truth. And so if you want to be told the truth, you actually have to be consistent and apologize when you're not, to take in the truth and seek to understand it. Can you tell me more about that? Yeah. Thank you so much for telling me that. I'm afraid that it means we're short timers. We're not going to get to do this for long. And I'm grateful that you told me. Let's see if we can work it out. Mm-hmm. Well, that went well. He notices. That went surprisingly well. So the next time, should I tell her? Should I tell her? Well, look what happened last time. Yeah, but do you think it'll go? Well, yeah, let's try, right? And so then they'll try telling the truth again. Well, do you react the same way? Or now do you just explode? It depends on how consistent you are, what they realize you can be counted on for. Yeah. And that's what they're looking. What can I count on her for? What can I count on him for? Everywhere, men are looking on what they can count on individual people for. And it's critical to not just their survival, but their happiness. Did you listen to or read The Queen's Code?
I did. I listened to the audio.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Very important to listen to the audio. Yeah. People who read it to themselves are filtering. They filter it through what they think it sounds like, and they miss it.
Tone, yeah.
And yeah. And so, like, when you're inside Bert's head, getting to discover the risks he's taking in joining the conversation with Karen and Kimberly, like, about objectifying women, knowing that if he hurts her, she'll let him fix it. She always has. So he takes the risk. And it's not that he thinks it shouldn't hurt her, right? It's like, he hopes it doesn't, but if it does, she'll let him fix it. And they need to know that, that we'll let them fix it. It was one of the earliest things that a man said on one of our panels. And it surprised me because he didn't mean it the way I thought. He said, penance must be served. And I thought he meant like, oh, we got to pay penance. And as he went on to explain, he says, we need to be told how to get back in your good graces. We need to be told, how can we make up for what we did? We need to pay penance, and we need you to serve our penance by telling us what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that also just like encouraging that honesty and that open communication, there has to be, and I feel like I've heard this from you, more curiosity over criticism, and that's building, you know, as opposed to breaking down. And I mean, that goes all the way back to the beginning where we talked about the frog farmer. It's like, are you criticizing or emasculating this person into pieces, or are you curious? Like, I really want to know who you are, and you know, and I think that that would also support that communication and sense of safety from men with women.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, they have so much to say when it's safe to say it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I will tell you something. Men generally plan in private. They plan silently. And you have to look for clues to figure out that they're planning so that you know when you can have input. It took me decades to figure out if the map was still on the table, I could have input on this trip. If he folded up the map, he'd already made the plan and committed to it, and any input I had would be considered sabotage.
Hmm.
Would be related to like disrespect. And not that he meant to be that way. It was just a reaction that he had. And it's funny, next month, my partner and I are moving to Sandpoint, Idaho. And I've been planning to move to Sandpoint for over a year. And he said, here, look at this. What do you think of this? I'm like, what is it? He goes, it's an apartment in Sandpoint on the water with a dock. I'm like, what for? and he said, because I figured out this plan where we each traveled to the other for 10 days once a month. And so we each got to be home 20 days a month, alone 10 days a month, with company 10 days a month. It was going to be this perfect plan. And he said, I want to be with you and I don't want to travel that much.
Hmm.
So I'm looking for a place in Sandpoint. And he went from looking for a place to Friday, he's closing on that place on the water in Sandpoint. And he's up and moving. He's not just having a place that he can stay when he comes to see me. He's moving to Sandpoint after 30 some odd years in Steamboat Springs. And I thought he'd never leave there. I never asked him to leave there. But when he started talking about this, I said, how long have you been working on this? He was about a month.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's how they do things. And
fascinating.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not defective. It's just a different system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Completely different system. If we can understand it, we can work with it.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to go, okay, I need an exception. I need you to do something very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole other conversation of,
so if you're going to be, that's not too far from us here in, Washington.
Yeah. I pop over. Actually, I go to North Idaho all the time. I go to Coeur d'Alene. I have friends in Sandpoint. The last beautiful woman that we interviewed, she's from Sandpoint, and we'll definitely would be like a kindred type of person.
Oh,
so
I mean, that'd be so cool. If we can have you back on for number two, number three, because I have like three pages of paper.
I know. I have
questions to ask you. So.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yes, 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 yes. We appreciate it. And yeah. We will put all the information for everyone to find you and all your good works and all of that on our...
we have our show notes. So
yeah. We will take care of all of that. Mm-hmm. We'll let you go.
Leslie will send you some links of things that we talked about that you can choose to put on there or not, but I'll make sure you have them. And we have... we'll give you a promo code so your people can get the Making Sense of Men book free.
Sweet. Nice.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, it'll be a good place for your humans to start. Because mostly we go about it all wrong.
Yes. Yeah.
We lead with sex and wonder why we never get the heart. So,
yeah. Yep. Wonder why there's so much tension.
All right, Allison. Yeah. Awesome. We love you and love your work. Allison. You take care. Thank we'll be in touch with you soon.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope this conversation has empowered you. Remember, you are unique and you are a miracle. Your body doesn't make mistakes. It responds perfectly to an imperfect environment. Until next time, go get that life.